Higher, higher, baby.
Hear that music? Get me in the mood. Good afternoon. You're listening to Cannabis Corner on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven and our homes and our offices. We're streaming live on TuneIn Radio and NewHavenIndependent.org. We're also streaming live video on Facebook Live. Just go to Facebook.com/NewHavenIndependent or go to your Facebook page, look up New Haven Independent, and you can always hit see first to enjoy all the great programming we have here to offer on WNHHLP. All right, everyone, it is Monday, November the 29th, 2021. We are just coming off a big Thanksgiving holiday. Uncle Lou is going to be joining us a little bit later today. He had an important emergency meeting that he had to take care of at the office. But my understanding is that he will be joining us later. So for right now, I have Isaiah. Isaiah, how are you today? Isaiah, of course, as you know, was introduced last week, and he is a representative of Cannabis Corner. He is now one of our interns. He's working with us, but he also mans the Cannabis Corner booth at the High Bazaar, which we want to thank the Canna Warriors, Joe Raymond and Cody, for providing us with that and allowing us a space in that awesome event that happens every week. So, Isaiah, how are you today?
I'm doing good, Joe. I can't complain. It's a little cold here in Connecticut, but we're getting used to it. So, I can't complain.
Yeah. That's the rumors I'm hearing, that it's freezing cold in Connecticut. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. I spent time with my dad. My mom came down. It was nice. I hung out with my nephew. My nephew's 3, so he's, you know, crazy right now. And so it was good. I spent a lot of time with family and smoked a couple huge joints.
Well, of course. I had a nice Thanksgiving. I had my birthday and Thanksgiving backed right up against each other.
Happy belated.
So it was kind of a celebratory. And that the whole weekend, actually, from Wednesday to Sunday, I think I just lost you. But anyway, from Wednesday to Sunday, I was just kind of chilling, relaxing, being grateful, enjoying what I have here. We actually had our Thanksgiving on the beach.
You were telling me that. Yeah,
it was very, very nice. I don't know if you know, but I do have some family down here. I have 5 cousins. I have 4 cousins down here.
Okay.
And so we all hung out together and spent Thanksgiving on the beach here in Vieques, Puerto Rico. It was very nice. And I felt very, very grateful throughout the day. And of course, there was cannabis and cannabis treats, of course, because that's what we're all giving. We're giving thanks for the plant, right?
Yes.
So this weekend was the final outdoor High Bazaar. And from what I heard, you could call it the Frozen Bazaar.
Oh, it was people's tents were flying. You know, we really all helped each other out a lot. It was a lot. You know, I brought extra bricks from my house so people could weigh down their tents and brought extra zip ties and extra tarps. It was, you know, we made it work. It was chilly, though. It was a cold one.
Right. That's what I heard. Very windy.
You know, we all, a lot of people came out too. There was still so much support, even in the cold, people still were out to party and hang out. The music was great. It was all together. It was really fun. Just needed a couple extra layers.
Right. Need a couple extra layers, right? Maybe bring a space heater with you or something.
A lot of people have those, yeah. A lot of people have space
heaters. Oh, see, that's the smart thing to do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, you know, of course, in Connecticut, we know that it does get cold in the winter. And outdoor events have to be either brought indoors or shut down for the season. Yeah. I've been hearing rumors. I've been trying to get some information from the High Bazaar guys. I've been hearing rumors that an indoor location has been secured and that there should be an announcement this week. So what have you heard about that? Were there any rumblings, rumors?
There is 100% an indoor location. It is in Hamden. It's very close to the cellar on Treadwell. So it's not going to be far for the people who are Hamden local or New Haven local. And also what I like to do is go on Instagram, you know, check Instagram daily, check the High Bazaar Instagram daily, and they'll put out a poster that says the event location. And I've also heard a rumor that it was going to go Saturday and Sunday. So I heard it would become an all weekend event, but once again, don't quote me on that, but that's a rumor that I did hear. And I'm really excited to hear that.
Right. Yeah. So what you're telling me is these are just rumors.
Yeah. The indoor location is a 100%. And if anyone wants to know it, I would hop on Instagram, check High Bazaar Instagram daily. And within the next couple of days, I'd say probably closer to Saturday, you'll find a poster that has the event page and, or the event location, probably the same time, I would imagine.
Okay. Sounds good. All right, so that's what we'll do. We'll check out the High Bazaar Instagram, the Can of Warriors Facebook. Usually what I'm finding is that on a Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning, you'll get the notice.
Yeah.
So good. Was there anything that stuck out for you? I know they did a great big toy drive.
The toy drive was amazing. The amount of, and also going further into the rest of the events following up to Christmas, we're doing the toy drive. So for anyone who wants to show up, bring a unwrapped toy and your admission will be $10 off. So instead of $20, you'll pay $10 if you bring an unwrapped toy.
Very nice. And even medical marijuana patients who get in for free, they should bring a toy too, because, you know, it's nice to give to the kids. I saw that picture on Facebook and I want to congratulate the guys and thank them for doing such a good charitable thing, giving these toys for tots. You know, I got to say, this is something I'm going to bring up to them. If they want to take those toys down to WPLR, the Chaz and AG Toy Drive, it might be able to get them some mainstream publicity. So I think I'm going to suggest that to them. Anyway,
with good intentions, it definitely shows. You know,
it definitely shows. And it's good that even in these hard times with inflation and all these things going on, life has gotten a little more expensive. People still find it in their heart to give toys to needy kids. And I love that. You know what I mean? I love that.
It was really nice to see.
Yeah, that's an awesome, awesome thing. And I commend those guys for doing that. So, all right. So we're going to definitely have a High Bazaar this weekend. We just don't know where it is. Now I also know that Uncle Lou, is doing an event this Friday, I believe, for Seeds and Clones over there at the WEPA Hemp Farms headquarters.
Yes,
right,
sir.
There on 49 Quinnipiac Avenue in North Haven. Right. And I'm assuming you'll be there.
Yes, I will.
As well as GTS Selects. And people can come down and talk to Uncle Lou and Lou Pino about seeds, clones, what the proper genetics would be for their medical home grow garden. You know, some tips maybe pick up a clone or two.
And also, I think they need equipment, if like fans, tents, lights.
Okay. So there'll be fans, tents, and lights there as well. And I think that starts at 5 p.m. if I'm not correct, 5 p.m.
Yep.
Okay. Very cool. So that's this Friday, the day before the High Bazaar. So you can go pick up some seeds and clones from Uncle Lou down there at Weppa Farms.
Really nice selections this week, right. But also.
Nice selections coming in this week. That's good to know. Maybe we can get Lou Pino on a little bit later. I know he's over there at the office to tell us what kind of strains will be available. But, you know, until then, we're waiting for our guests to come on today. Also, one thing I wanted to mention, on December the 7th, the Cannabis Equity Commission, which is kind of running the legalization program, is doing a public hearing. And they will be taking comments from the public on how they can improve the recreational, the adult use cannabis program here in Connecticut. So anybody, I don't know if they're going to be virtual testimony or not. From what I heard, you have to go up there in person. But yeah, if people are interested, you know, it's a good way to get involved in the process and make sure this thing is done right. You know, I myself have I wish I was there, but I do have a couple of things that I think should be addressed. And we're going to address some of those topics a little bit later once our guests get on. But I think two things that strike me are, A, the fact that people are home growing, but they're not allowed to use the testing facilities here.
Yeah.
For the public, that only the licensed cultivators here are allowed to use the testing facilities. Now, I think that is a disservice to the people who are home growing and want to test their product to see their potency so they know how to, titrate and dose it. There is one thing I think that needs to be done, because they do it in Massachusetts. They have always done it in Massachusetts, and it's worked out just fine. So I think that would benefit the program. And the other thing is, I think, and I discussed this on the air with Lupino, and he wholeheartedly agrees with me, I think we need to establish a license for breeders and genetics seeds distributors.
100%.
Because they have licenses for cultivators, they have licenses for dispensaries, they have licenses for producers, just delivery, small cultivators, bakers, but they don't have they have no real mechanism, and they want a seed to sale system, right? They're implementing this big old computerized seed to sale system, but they have no mechanism in place to provide seeds or track these seeds, knowing where they come from. And I see that Ben has joined us. I think he's probably trying to get his audio straight. And Ben is the owner of a dispensary, so I'm going to ask him this question as well.
Right into the fire, Joe.
How are you, Ben? Let me give you a proper introduction, Ben. I want to do that first. Ben is, first of all, a friend of the show. He has been on a couple times here with us before, but he hasn't been on for a while. And Ben is one of the few dispensary owners who will actually come on and talk to us. So that's a good thing. Ben is the founder of Fine Fettle, and Fine Fettle owns 3 of the 18 dispensaries in Connecticut, with locations in Newington, Willimantic, and very soon Stamford. It is a company founded and operated out of Connecticut. Fine Fettle has now recently expanded into Massachusetts with 2 grows and 2 dispensaries, a processing license in Rhode Island, and was recently awarded one of the 6 vertically integrated licenses in Georgia. Now that sounds like a big coup. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. For usual.
Yeah, but it's really great to have you on. So, I wanted to chat with you. I just wanted to touch base with you real quick on a few things. Isaiah and I were just discussing something that I think has been severely neglected by Connecticut, and that not only Connecticut, but other states as well, which is the mechanism to regulate the actual genetics and the seeds. Now, you've been a dispensary owner for quite a while, right?
Yep.
So obviously you had to start with something, right?
Yeah.
Now I see we do have a seed to sale process here in place in Connecticut, right? So your plants must be tracked right from the seed all the way to the dispensary. How did you first procure whatever you needed to get started? And why do you think the states always neglect, you know, I say they should just make a license for breeders and genetic and seed distributors. Just have a license. You buy the license just like you would buy a cultivator license, a dispensary license. And then you're part of the integrated system. What are your thoughts on that? And how do you, as a dispensary owner, a legit dispensary owner, get, you know, how did you get started with that being quite a big hole in the legislation?
So in Connecticut, it's not something that we have to directly worry about, right? Because we are not one of the four producers in Connecticut. But from my understanding, the rules originally in Connecticut were, you know, you had to start from seed, right? Period, end of sentence. And so I don't know if that's still the case with their new genetics, if they still have to start from seed. But in Massachusetts, this is something we deal with. And I would argue it's the dirty little secret of the entire industry, which is, oh, this has been illegal for so long. Like, where does it all come from? And so the rule in Massachusetts is that you can start from seed, you can start from tissue culture, which I actually think is a great, safe way of doing it.
That's a brand new technology.
Yeah. So basically you're cutting out the genetics of the plant. You're growing it directly in a Petri dish. You can take out the cellular structure from the plant, essentially growing the first piece in a Petri dish. So you can assure that, you know, like there's no mold or there's no disease in it. And you just get to the base genetic root. 98% of all fresh cut flowers that you see in the United States and the world are done from tissue culture. Every, you know, Driscoll's raspberry, strawberry, blueberry comes from tissue culture. So that's way two. And the other rule in different states is cutting from clones. And clones need to be, in Massachusetts, for example, less than 8 inches when you bring them in. As long as it's less than 8 inches, you can do it. There's certain like federal regulatory rules about, you know, seeds are technically legal, and cluttings of plants, if not at a certain level, are technically legal. And, you know, generally we're going to, or we've got connections with breeders and, you know, folks who think it's folks who are, you know, creating tested safe plants. And we're going all over the place getting these genetics for our cultivations in different areas. And I don't have like the right answer. I actually think a seed bank, legal seed bank in each state program is the right way to do it, right? Like in general, you probably don't want a ton of seeds coming out of your plant as you're like getting your eighth from the dispensary and there's seeds in it. It probably means that it wasn't trimmed or cured or manicured well, or you overstress the plant to try and get it to a higher THC level. And so seeds were coming up out of the woodwork, right? Or up the wazoo. But it's definitely an issue that is, I don't know why the states have done it in the way they have. And I don't know enough about the laws in some of the more mature markets on the West Coast on if they have specific programs for it. You know, when we're looking at genetics, we want something that we know has been tested before so that we know generally where the cannabinoid profile is going to be, or that if it's a plant that is more or less, you know, more or less prone towards molding or more or less prone towards, you know, just like the size and look of the plant, because genetics are all over the place. And then once you have a stock, right, you're crossbreeding or you're constantly bringing more in into your cultivation facilities. I know that's a long-winded answer, but it's a long way of saying, it's sort of the dirty secret of the industry. And I don't know why states have structured it that way, but each state has a different model of how you can get the first plants in.
Right. Right. And and you're the second person who said it's like the dirty little secret, you know? And
yeah,
and,
like this stuff, it all existed, and cannabis has only been like, and everyone didn't get it from Ole Miss, which has the federal license to grow cannabis legally for the last, you know, 30, 40 some odd years. It's all coming from somewhere.
Right. Yeah. It has to start somewhere. Right.
Exactly.
So, you know, you brought up an interesting, and you know, I've always wondered this. A lot of people, sometimes they do get seeds in their dispensary, something that they might've bought from one of your dispensaries, or they do get a product that had mold on it. I want you to clarify that you guys at the dispensaries don't even get to open up the jars and look in them. Correct. They come from the cultivators already weighed, already sealed. Your job is to dispense what they give you, correct?
Correct. So I don't actually have much more to add because you noted it perfectly, but different states have it. Different states do have it differently, right? Like in Massachusetts, you can technically do a deli menu. You can display sample product. I wish, and I, you know, I'm generally pretty outspoken around stuff in Connecticut, but I wish that we could have, I love those clear boxes with the magnifying glass on one side and the snifter on the other. And I wish that we could make that available. It's just not allowed in the regulations as of today. You know, I'm all for transparency across the board. You know, I know there's obviously been this testing issue and picture brought up in Connecticut. You had CTMMP Data Man, I think is his Instagram last week.
Yes, I had him last week.
You had him on last week, and he's been doing a lot of analysis and insight into this look. And, you know, I just want more transparency on what is the process, what is the information, what is the data, you know, because it's interesting in Massachusetts, like they test mold and microbials, essentially moisture, as one measurement. And we're an outdoor grower. And as an outdoor grower, we're not controlling temperature and humidity. And simply by being outside, it's darn near impossible for us to pass the state's regulations, which are basically the same as the California and Connecticut, that 10,000 CFU. But when you include moisture essentially in that, or healthy microbials, it's darn near impossible. And so the only outdoor growers are using a remediation. And remediation is, it kills terpenes, but it does also kill microbials and mold. And so it's this very hard balance. It's this very hard balance everywhere. And I think that in a new industry, and again, these are plants. These are not pills that are just conjured up
created in a lab. Right, right.
This is very different. And so the standards, while the goal is to be the same, every raspberry is not the same. Every strawberry is not the same. Every apple. Apples are actually a really interesting parallel because, you know, if we could only eat Macintoshes, like no one would really eat apples because Macintoshes are bad. But,
right, they're better,
you know, products. We have all the different ones and even the different varieties are different.
Right. No, very, very true. And it is the same with cannabis. We're dealing with a plant. This is not a laboratory we're dealing in. I wanted to touch base now. Do you think maybe that the adult use recreational laws will be a little bit looser and allow for this, where you could actually look at the plant? Or, you know, is it something that they're going to, because, you know, we'll get into this in a couple minutes. I've got Jason Ortiz going to come on in a little bit. But, you know, they're really pushing to get the recreational market up and running. Mm-hmm. Now, you as a dispensary know that in the beginning, you're still going to have the same four producers providing you with the cannabis. Yep. And I'm assuming that you have three dispensaries in Connecticut, that you are going to probably want to do that hybrid license where you're going to sell both, right? And so what, you know, what is the process to getting into that? And have you, you know, being obviously a dispensary, you might have a little bit more inside info. Do you know where they're at with it, what they're thinking about as far as how they're going to differentiate between medical and adult use? Are we going to be able to use strain names instead of these fake made up, you know, names that they have? What do we know about this?
Yeah, I don't want to be accused of being like middleman Dan or, you know, hopping the fence, whatever. But the answer is yes and no. I do know and I don't know. So what I do know is there are specific requirements that we need to complete to be able to convert from medical to hybrid, which means a co-located in our facility in the same building, same square footage in theory, be able to operate both. You know, we need a workforce development plan. We need a social equity plan. We need to either give the full $1 million to the social equity fund or partner with a social equity applicant in a business that is sort of a joint venture. We also need local zoning. I can proudly say that Fine Federal are, I still believe, the two only dispensaries that have had their town approved to operate in a hybrid model. So Willimantic and Newington both gave us the approval. We definitely want to operate both. There were regulations that came out. I don't know about the strain names yet. I really hope they change it, because my guess is the genetics will be exactly the same. I don't know about showing product in the window. I know all I can talk about is for us. Like, we, if any of you have been to our Willimantic facility, like, we've got a sort of U-shaped counter that can fit, we think, 12 registers. And one of the things that we'll do is, like, we will have X number of registers for strictly medical. We will have a check-in window for strictly medical. We will have inventory that can only go to medical, either based on, you know, sort of milligrams or potency based on the state's rules. And then we'll have a separate sort of system within the same store for adult use, but all happening together. And, but there's still details to be ironed out and regulations to happen. So it'll happen. I don't know when. I think the December 7th meeting from the Social Equity Council will hopefully teach us a lot, you know, so for what those applications look like and what we need to do and what social equity applicants need to do. We've had social equity applicants, you know, folks who think they qualify, reaching out to us to partner. And I tell them all the same thing. Like, I don't know what we need to do. So the last thing I would want to do is, like, set up an agreement with somebody and, like, not have it be legal. And so, you know, we sort of have a waiting list in a sense to like say, what are we going to do? All I know is that, like, versus some of the other companies in Connecticut, we are based out of Connecticut and we really focus on this market. And so we're going to be able to move really quickly once the rules do come out, because that's how we've always done it. We put the time and the effort in to make it happen.
Right. Do the research first, get ready and ready.
And I know like people are not happy with me when I give that answer, because like I've made real friends, I think, in this industry. And
no, you have.
Folks who are at right. Who are not like stereotyped to be my friend and partner and advocate, but you know, but like, I would love to work with some of these folks, and I just don't want to do it in a way that is bad for them, bad for us, bad for the state. Like, I've got to be realistic about setting the expectations here. And the expectation right now is I don't know what the expectations are.
Right. Right. Well, and I think we're all in that position. I'll bring Jason on in a second. He may have a little bit of insight, but I think we're all in the same position. We're kind of just hurry up and wait, you know, even though
that's
you know,
story of cannabis.
Yeah.
The legal cannabis market is hurry up and wait. And then you go on a race to start the marathon. Right. Because
right.
I will just tell everyone, operating is very hard. These businesses are no joke. And whether you've been operating in the black market or the gray market, which is a lot of California, or the green market, which is how I describe the legal market, these are hard businesses and you have different problems in each of those. And, you know, but getting to that point to start is an enormous milestone. And then you're like, holy crap, I got to now like run this business
profitable.
That just cost me millions of dollars to run. So it's really interesting.
Yes. Okay, good, good, good. And, you know, I'm going to bring Jason in from SSDP, which he is the president of. But also he has been one of the lead, and you know, obviously
totally.
We've all worked together. And Ben, I want to just thank you, in, you know, first of all, for supporting Home Grow. As a dispensary owner, that seems
good.
To be against the grain over that. And for also getting involved in the hearings, I know you've shown up to some of the hearings. You're one of the few dispensary owners who did. You're one of the few dispensary owners who are still located here in Connecticut, you know, and I don't want to get into that right now, but I have gotten into it. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that you also picked up the license in Stamford. Does that mean you are taking it over from Curaleaf?
No. So we acquired the license from Nature's Medicines in stores.
Oh,
and
okay.
We, you know, told the state right away that we were going to close the store's location. I think they call it Mansfield. I'm a big UConn fan. And so I just always call it stores. I can't say Mansfield. I don't know why. But we said we were going to close it. Willimantic and Mansfield are 9 miles away from each other. You know, it was a very small patient population just in Tolland and what county are we in? In Willimantic, my brain is frying right now.
What Litchfield is it?
The other one, Tolland County. Thank you, Ethan. In those two counties, right, there just weren't. And so we saw that in Fairfield County, there were 1 million people and 3 dispensaries. And honestly, they were the 3 big companies in Connecticut. And
right,
we wanted to shake things up in those markets. We think we operate a little bit differently in the state. And so from a business, it is a purely business decision. I'm never pretending it is not. I know it has not been perfect for the patients in stores Mansfield. But from a business decision and from what we're doing, we just thought to be able to move down there was really important. And then, you know, to add the cherry on top, the town of Mansfield, somewhat surprisingly, you know, put a moratorium on adult use. And so we think that we think moratoriums everywhere are ridiculous. Just going to throw that out there. And then to be in Stamford was a really good thing for our business and for the patients down there ultimately, because they're held to 3 dispensaries in a really big and massively populated area. And whenever we can shake things up, we do.
I appreciate that, because I know who your big competition is going to be down there, and I'm glad you're giving them some competition. Yeah.
And I just want to say one last thing, because I am not one of those people who is like, the big operators are just the big bad wolf in this industry.
No.
Everyone is paving a path in cannabis.
The big operators were all small operators at one time.
They were all small, and they were all taking risk, and they all continue to take risk. And not everyone is ecstatic about the way the market is going, but this is capitalism also, right?
Yes.
Like, and I love Treehouse. I think Treehouse makes incredible beer. If you were to ask the Treehouse founders if they'd rather be Bud Light sometimes, I'm sure they would say Budweiser. I'm sure they'd say yes. And so there is space for everyone in this. You know, the hardest, we're in this interesting inflection point where we're growing and getting bigger, but we're still not big. But you know, people yell at us because we're not small anymore.
Right.
And it's this very difficult balance, and it's the nature of a growth industry. And I like what these big guys are doing, because they are truly the ones who create change in a different level. Federal change is coming because big operators and small advocates are pushing and working together. And even though the goals are not exactly the same, I do think the larger goal of let's destigmatize, let's normalize, let's make sure that there's safety, right? Let's get people out of, I haven't seen one big company who has said, nope, everyone should still be in jail, right? Like, you know, Jason might disagree with me there, but like, I do think that we're all paving this path together in different ways, and that shouldn't be forgotten. Someone's going to yell at me for saying that, but I really think it's important, because big change doesn't happen without everyone involved doing it in this industry.
All right. On that note, please hang in there. I want you to stay in on this discussion, Ben. Jason Ortiz of SSDP. And I want to welcome you to the show.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for coming on. I wanted to just have a little discussion with you. Now,
sure.
You did send me a message in the chat regarding that you did. There is some new info out on policy, and there are some new documents that are required for partnerships, to form partnerships. That is in the chat, Ben. I don't know if you saw that link. I will post it on the Cannabis Corner Facebook after the show. But welcome, Jason. I'm sure you know Ben.
We've all
been in the trenches together.
Well, the one good guy in the state, man. I'm glad we got Stanford.
That's not true, but I do like hanging. I do like talking and working with and arguing sometimes with Jason.
I'll say the one good guy willing to get out there and fight about it, right? Because I do think there are lots of folks that maybe have right intentions but aren't willing to really like go out there and push and make sure we're pushing in the right direction. And it's invaluable to have you in that space, right? And so I definitely think, you know, cannabis is one of those mixed reviews on like every piece of it industries. But, you know, I'm definitely thankful that Fine Fettle is part of the conversation, and it's not just the really big dogs. And it is interesting because in drug policy, in any kind of industry, right, like you don't stay a small business. You either get big or you fail, right? And so there's no like static, you're just going to be a good guy all the time forever. And so I think that's where sometimes folks get a little nostalgic about like the way it was. and just want it to stay there, right? And that's just not possible. And I think
I'll give a quick, very quick story. Like, we are now operating on Martha's Vineyard, which is literally figuratively and regulatorily an island. And I am not from there, right? We are not local. And so I was reading this newspaper article about about our acquisition, and someone commented like, look at big business coming in. And I was like, in my office, like, am I the big business here? But that's the nature of the ebb and flow. And that's being local. Like, you know, Jason's from Connecticut, but he's doing big advocacy in cannabis, but he's still local here. To some folks, he's big advocacy. Right? Like, it's really interesting.
He's SSDP, you know?
Well, and when I was president of MCBA, I got it heavy and was like, wait a minute. Like, I'm here to push back on a lot of the top-down economics, but I got introduced at an event one time as the corporate guy. And I had to absorb that moment of, like, in that context, they were saying it as a positive thing. Like, this person can help us figure out investment or how to, you know, get licenses. But the way they said it, I was just like, I have, you know, crossed a line in my life now where somebody introduced me as the corporate guy, but I was representing, you know, multi-state operators and equity folks that had built their businesses in California. And like, compared to the place that it was in Puerto Rico, it wasn't wrong of them to say that, right? And so even myself, as someone that started, you know, fighting from the bottom of this thing as somebody who was arrested, to now being seen as like big cannabis, or like, there was an interesting debate of like me pretending I was an outsider over the last session, right? And I was like, I'm not pretending, right? So it was a very interesting thing to see transitions over time and having to like adopt and understand new roles and new responsibilities. And SSDP is actually an org that similarly, we started as a young scrappy org. Now, 20 years later, we're the world's largest youth-led drug policy organization. Like, that's just a fact, right? And so now though, when people criticize us, I have to help my staff understand that like, it's a good thing in a lot of ways, right? It means folks are paying attention. They care about what we do, giving you opportunities to improve. And just because we work hard and we really care what we do doesn't mean we're not going to make mistakes, right? And I think that transition from the resistance to actually having to govern things can be difficult, right? But it is a positive thing, right? Like, we don't want to look at that as like bad that Fine Fiddle is growing. It's not. It's a good thing. I want folks that have good hearts to grow and get bigger. And there's going to be a time where, you know, Ben might be the person that we have to fight on a federal level because they're doing some shenanigans with their trade association, right? And then come back and be like, yo, but in Connecticut, can we help on this thing, right? Like, and so that's one thing in cannabis and drug policy, you know, no permanent friends, no permanent enemies, but knowing that like, these large entities operate in lots of different political spaces, and you want to adjust your perspective on them based on that particular space, right? How I feel about asking folks of Curaleaf, Connecticut, and how I think about Curaleaf, say, at the international level or the national level, will just be different, right? And now, as we start to talk about the federal level, organizations like Amazon, Philip Morris, right? Like, these are way bigger than even the biggest cannabis companies that are entering the space as well. Right. So at a certain point, our big businesses are folks we may have to align against, like, the real big business, right? That could come in and wipe all of us out, and we're in trouble. And this became really interesting when we started to talk about regulation under the FDA or the ATF, or they'll probably change the name of it, right? But like, what entity regulates cannabis the most and what restrictions one puts on the other, right? Like, this is going to have really interesting consequences for the long-term future of cannabis. And we may see ourselves more closely aligned with our previous enemies than, say, Philip Morris or vice versa, some of the big pharmaceutical companies that under the FDA, you get one producer of a drug, right? Not 1,000. One. And so I think we're seeing that play out in that way with the psychedelic space and different entities getting FDA approval for certain psychedelic therapies. And having gone from cannabis to working in psychedelics, it's fascinating to see the different details, but the same concerns kind of across the board. But there we're looking at one owner. So you can imagine if there was one FDA approved producer of cannabis for the entire country, we're talking billions, maybe trillions.
Pfizer weed.
Well, we're also talking insurance covering it, right? So this is the big difference that if something is FDA approved, it potentially could get covered by insurance. And so if you start to get covered by Medicaid and Medicare and things like the money, you add zeros on top of zeros, right? So I understand the interest and the incentive there for sure. But we do want it to be more like what is regulated under the ATF, like how alcohol is, right? We don't have one producer of beer. We have lots of producers of beer. But that fight is going to happen at the federal level, and who we decide to fight with is going to determine how it goes. So it's going to be really interesting that I may not like folks on a local level because they're pushing me out personally and still say, you know, politics make strange bedfellows at the federal level. We got to do this together, right. And then choose to fight it out again after those battles come. So, you know, definitely stepping into the SSDP role has been eye-opening because it has broadened the insights into the economics of all of the different drugs, some of which are more or less socially accepted. Right. But the FDA doesn't necessarily make their decisions based on social acceptance. Right. And there are lots of substances that we probably think would be illegal or on the controlled substances list that are pharmaceutical drugs that were, you know, created and developed in a lab. Oxycodone. Right. And OxyContin, for example. So it's been really fascinating to see the relative size of different players when it comes to how decisions are made and how the political alignments just like are in a tornado all the time of like who is supporting who and for what reasons.
Yes, no, exactly.
And who is condemning who and for what reasons, because this fentanyl scare is the opposite.
I just want to, okay. So Connecticut made big news, national news last week. It was on CBS News. It was all over Twitter. Connecticut had one of the first laboratory tested and discovered cases of fentanyl overdose and fentanyl tainted, allegedly, right. to me, the timing of this article, the fact that it came out of the Connecticut Department of Health and Plymouth Police Department, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, that the timing of this all seems a little fishy to me, and this is not the first time we have heard of this. So I wanted to get both your guys' input on this. Is fentanyl-laced cannabis a threat to people who do not buy from dispensaries?
No. No.
I have no idea is my real answer. Like, Here's what I'll say. I don't know. Right. Again, I don't know. I saw the news articles, like on its surface, it looks scary. And then I've read CT Cannon Warriors posts on it. And I saw Jason's post and I've read other things and I've listened to folks that I trust and believe. And they say, this is propaganda and not real. Right. And so I don't know what to think. All that I do know is I do think product should be safe no matter what. And I don't know the best way to do that, but I think the best way to do that is by testing. And that's what's really important. And so like, I can't speak to fentanyl. If it's not real, it's a wild marketing thing put out by the police who didn't want dispensaries open, but now are pushing for dispensaries to be open. Like, seems very interesting to me. I have no idea. I do know, for example, though, that like, when the whole vape scare happened 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, legal bought vapes were not giving people lung problems in the same way that and I think it's more having to do with the hardware than the oil that was in it in general. But the more that we safely test and have transparency around testing, I think is a good thing. But on fentanyl, I got no idea. And I just want people to do it safely because this is a product that should be either helping people medically, helping people socially, helping people emotionally, helping people enjoy their day, night, sleep better. And the more we make sure that's the case and don't have to worry about whatever the negative use cases are, which I actually think is also like much further downstream, like arrests and addiction and chemical addiction and, you know, like this idea of a gateway drug, the better. And so again, like, maybe an answer not everyone thinks I'm like taking a stand on, but I don't know enough. But you read this and it looks scary. And at its surface, it looks really scary, but I'm not a lab guy. I just know that.
I mean, Reefer Madness looked really scary too. Yeah, right? Right. And this is the thing. If we have the science, we have the history, and then let's talk about like the economics of it. Right. So on the science side of it first, you don't smoke fentanyl with an open flame. Just to put that out there, I know most folks probably don't smoke fentanyl, but the actual chemistry of it, you have to have a separation between the drug and the flame because the flame will destroy the drug. And so if you're somebody that genuinely either wants to consume opioids or wants to put it on a substance for somebody else to enjoy opioids, anything related to a flower from cannabis is going to destroy the drug. So on a very pure physical chemical level, nobody would coordinated effort put a drug that is going to be destroyed in the consumption process over lots of different things. Will people try all kinds of shit? Yeah. Right. Like people have mixed, you know, terrible substances and alcohol and died. Right. So does that mean that
well,
we have
not even mixed alcohol and died?
Right. Right. Exactly. But that doesn't mean that there's a conspiracy to poison folks through alcohol, right? Like it is its own poison. I know that's what you're going with on that one. But the fact that some folks try X is not the same thing as everyone should be scared of this or different types of cannabis may have it, right? And there are lots of different ways. Yeah, you should buy your cannabis in a safe, you know, controlled manner. I support legalization 100%. I just don't think we have to scapegoat and demonize drugs or other people to get there, right? And we literally don't. Like, we're already getting there despite that demonization. So what we're seeing is the police demonizing folks that use fentanyl, right? Because let's be real, this scare is going to result in more people being arrested for fentanyl because now there's this hysteria that these folks are putting it on cannabis. It's not happening. So the cost of propaganda is not zero. This is not just a messaging situation. There'll be folks in Hartford, New Haven, that there's going to be some big bust that they're going to have on fentanyl. And they save the day, right? The other thing, of course, is you can grow it yourself, right? That's always the option. If you grow it yourself, you know what's in it. But that being said, I think the big
theory, you know, it's in it, right? I just want to say with homegrown, we actually at Fettle Fest, which is our like annual patient appreciation week, which was last week, we had home grow consultants. Mm-hmm. Lou didn't contact us quickly enough. So sorry, Lou, if he's listening, that he wasn't one of our guys this time. But you know, like if you have if you're growing in like your moldy basement or your 90% humidity basement, like you're going to have mold in your flower grown at home.
Sure. But you're definitely not going to have heroin in it.
You are definitely. Yeah, I would hope you are definitely not going
to
have heroin.
Not unless you were trying to put it on there. Right. Well, I think,
but, and the reality is though, but like, everyone should have the opportunity to do what they want to do that is best for them. It's, and personally, like, I think home grow should be fine in the adult use market too. So like, everyone should have the opportunity to handle what they want. You would never say to somebody like, don't home brew. Like, right, don't home brew.
Exactly.
Well, like, right. So grow yourself at home if that's what, if that's
yeah,
what
you're doing. Where's the fentanyl laced home brew, yeah, you know?
No, so fentanyl laced marijuana isn't real. Like, don't worry about it. But have a system for everyone, not just people buying at the dispensary, that you can ensure that whatever you are getting is safe and tested. I don't like to put anything in my body that I don't know. Some people will say the fact that you have a Coca-Cola, you're poisoning yourself, right? Like
you are.
Hold on. Let's bring this back to what the police are actually doing, right?
Sure.
Because it's not about mold. We're not talking about mold, right? And we're not talking about improper process. The police are making a claim that people are adding poison to things that people are purchasing on the street based on, I don't even say faulty, in like non-existent evidence, right? It is not just something to brush aside when the police lie to the public blatantly. And we have to ask why. The immediate call to open up dispensaries earlier.
That's why, right?
Right? Like, in this context, right? It wasn't a
3 days it took. Yeah.
It wasn't an immediate call to provide support for those dealing with drug addiction. It wasn't as immediate support, any kind of support. It was that we got to open up the dispensaries faster. And that in and of itself shows purpose and intent of what the police were trying to do here. Right. This was not about public safety at all. This was about the financial benefit of opening it up sooner, and that some of our growers have donated money to the police departments, right? Like, that is a real thing. And so on the science side of it, doesn't make any sense, right? On the economic side of it, it makes a whole lot of sense because it's just extra money for folks and they're doing their job. But the result is going to be folks that are using fentanyl or other opioids are going to be targeted more. There's going to be more fear and stigma and misinformation in the public. And this is how we got to the situation of having to legalize cannabis to begin with. So we can't just say this is like, oh, a mistake that they made from incomplete evidence. They knew exactly what they were doing. And they're purposefully scapegoating people that use opioids in order to make their buddies more money. And that is unconscionable and disgusting. And so we do not need to scapegoat communities or other drugs or anyone in order to make the case for legalization, unless your interest there is purely profit. And I don't think that's something that we should take lightly, that they're claiming that somebody who consumed cannabis and also like got tested for positively using opioids means that one is inside the other, right?
Correlation and causation are not necessarily.
No, and let's remember,
and from what you're saying, the science says they are not, right?
They are not. But not only that, that what the right response to this is that we should not be criminalizing folks that are using fentanyl, because those people cannot honestly answer a police officer when they say, did you use this drug that's a felony? They're going to say, no, I only used cannabis. I don't know how that got in my system, because admitting to a felony to a police officer is not the smart thing to do. So because things are still illegal, it creates these situations where we're getting false and wrong data in order for folks to avoid jail time. And then they're using that to justify statewide policy. Right. The ripples, not just statewide, because now it's going national. Right. So the lie started in, Watertown, Connecticut, or wherever the police are from, that then ripples out to things, that are really going to negatively affect.
There was actually people in Hamden as well who were talking about it.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I think in what you guys were talking about earlier, because I've been listening the whole time, perception is everything. And if you have people who are perceiving something outside of the cannabis community as, evil or devilish inside of the cannabis community, then you have that ripple effect of negativity. So perception, is really the main line of what you're saying. Just wanted to throw that in there, because you're eloquently putting the way that it's going is.
Yeah,
it's.
I think Jason put it pretty concisely. The timing was, very conspicuous. The follow-up article, I followed the timeline. I followed the timeline. The first article came out on the 19th. The second article came out on the 20th. And on the 22nd, here comes this article to open up the dispensaries.
Now, from good police thing, officers. This is the wildest moment of my life. I really had to have a chat with my staff about this.
And I know, Ben, you had nothing to do with this.
How far we've come.
No, we did not have anything to do with this.
I know you did.
I honestly didn't even think about two and two together. I did after I started sort of seeing this ripple effect in the comments. And oh, Lou is on. Great. It's just, there's a continued stigmatization around quote unquote drug use that even as the world liberalizes around cannabis, right? The biggest cannabis medical market in the country is in the state of Oklahoma.
West over there right now.
We're getting kicked off,
really an interesting place.
We could still talk. My solution is allow testing for all cannabis to the public, like they do in Massachusetts. They need to do that in Connecticut. Real quick, Jason, how do they reach you?
SSDP.org, Jason at SSDP. And don't trust the police, trust scientists. It would be really obvious what is going on here if you just follow that one rule.
Okay. Ben, how do we reach you and how do we get?
Yeah, finefettle.com. You can reach us on finefettleCT on Instagram. You can email us at hello@finefettle.com. Too many people end up with my cell phone number. I never know how, but, and come visit our dispensaries. Talk to us.
Yeah, Ben is wide open. We want to thank you guys both for coming on and clearing that up. We appreciate it. We hope the public realize that this is all kind of a sham and a scam. And Isaiah, Lou, thank you guys for coming on. I just want to mention Jason and SSDP will be at the big psychedelics convention coming up in December. And there is the public hearing on the 7th, Seeds and Clones on this Friday, and High Bazaar this Friday, but this Saturday, but we don't know where. Okay. Lou, I mean, Harry, hit that music. Guys, rolling thank up. You so much.
Thank you.
Great show.
We'll see pleasure you as always, everybody.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Isaiah. Thank you, Lou.
Thank you.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, hey, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La da 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 da. I was gonna go to class before I got high.
Come on, y'all.
Check it out. I could have cheated and I could have passed, but I got high. La da. I'm taking it next semester, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, cause I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
Go to the next.